You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Let's talk about it. We would crack one. Me and him and Klaus would stand in his fancy kitchen. And
they kitchen. This kitchen was like multi-million-dollar mansion, you know. And go ahead, son.
They had fucking walnuts and bowls, right?
The bowl the size of like this round, a full of walnuts. I mean, it had to be 25 pounds of walnuts.
So random.
hundreds of walnuts. So we would, and for hours, we'd sit there. It was the funniest thing. You throw a walnut on the ground and like crunch it and go. And like it would make the sound of breaking, but we'd be all.
We were super drunk, of course, the whole time, right? So Shannon would walk up to me and go, hold on, put a walnut under his foot and grab my head and go. And we would laugh for 20 minutes thinking that was the funniest thing of all time because we're so wasted, man. Like,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 2020. I'm Siobhan Cronin here, as always, with Benny Goodman and Corey Paza. How's it going, guys?
It's going great. This is one of those episodes where I just got to sit back and enjoy the conversation, which is nice.
Yeah, well, it's when
legends rise.
Yeah, and you know, we had once again one of our favorite co-hosts, Shannon Larkin, yep, of Godsmack, the Apocalypse Blues revival, and another return guest. It was so great to see these guys interact. Mikey Doling of the legendary Snot, which I've been told is a funny way to introduce that.
Soulfly. Zero, Wyody, a band that's going to tour in Belgium but doesn't even have any music out yet because they're that cool. Fuck yeah. That guy.
This was like a history lesson of like living through the 90s and their whole careers.
Just making us jealous that we weren't born, you know, like 10, 15 years earlier.
Hey, remember that mansion we were at? Remember the band that had a mansion?
When record labels would like buy you a mansion.
Back in the good old days of music. So anyway, without further ado, stay tuned. Part one with Shannon Larkin and Mikey Doling.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Benny Goodman. I'm here on the show 2020 because you probably have already gone to 2020-D.com to subscribe. But if you haven't, press the subscribe button. But I'm here with my cohorts in crime, Siobhan Cronin and Corey Paza. But before I ask them how they are, I'm going to hand the microphone off to one of our favorite co-hosts, Mr. Shannon Larkin of the Apocalypse Blues Revival and Godsmack, Wrathchild, the notorious Apocalypse that literally melted minds backstage for years. Shannon, how are you?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to 2020. I'm living a dream right now because tonight's guest is none other than my dear friend Mikey fucking Doling.
Hi, brother.
Woo! That was a great intro. Right. Thank you.
And if you don't know Mikey, Shannon, how should we know who Mikey is? Who is Mikey Doling?
Mikey is the legendary guitarist of Snot, long-term huge rock star in Europe with the great Channel Zero, not to mention one of my best friends and a dear trusted soul. And may
Did we block out Amen? Did we block it out?
Let me say,
that wasn't Amen.
Let me say some more.
Oh, I blocked that out. Sonny Mayo.
Saying more. Fucking one of my favorite songwriters. There it is. Mikey Doling.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, guys. I got my son here, Shannon. Check it out. Jax. Yeah. Say hi.
Hi. Well, hi.
Are you giving him coffee right now?
No, not today. Today gets Jack Daniels.
So it's not just a clever name.
No.
Well, this is great to have you both back on the podcast and always fun to have Shannon co-hosting. So what's been
There's
going
no
on, guys?
There's no better human on Earth than Shannon Larkin.
Where are you co-hosting from today? Are you co-hosting from Earth or are you co-hosting from outer space today, Shannon?
I'm co-hosting from my hippie room, which you'll see someday, Benny.
Well, I'm going to be in that room.
Is that going to be soon, bro? Because you keep... So let everybody should know that Shannon is one of the most... prolific writers. He writes the most amazing lyrics and he keeps saying, Benny, come up with these ideas. I have so many ideas, but then he keeps like leaving me like a Tinder date that doesn't love me and just doesn't come to my house anymore. What's up with that, Shannon? I want to be in the room with you. I want to like vibe for real, guys. Stop teasing me with the good time writing these beautiful poems at me.
And all this, there's just been some you know, crazy stuff that's going on, you know, with and there's a lull in both bands, which you think, my dog's trying to climb up here. You're going to knock the candles over, Stella. You can't come up on my futon with me.
Aw. Dog. Dogs are welcome.
I know.
But they knock candles over and candles burn houses. Right, yeah. Right.
So maybe not welcome in this context.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, yeah. Shannon, go on. So there's a lull in both bands right now is what you're saying?
Yeah, and you would think that, boy, I would just be like on fire and prolific and writing a bunch. But basically, you know, I had that like lightning and bottled it and wrote like six songs. And then, you know, I've been creative, by the way, but like I haven't got the energy, maybe. I've been lazy, maybe, but I've been working hard around my house and shit. But
you always do.
And I have a student right back in the back that I can just run in there and I can lay the tracks. I can do it and start the process. And fucking, I've just, you know, but as I do this, also other shit has come. Like I've sent Benny some stuff, whatever. Benny's in the band, by the way. I don't know if anybody, I think 100 people watched our live stream.
Bro, Benny is a freaking amazing musician. I've been listening to his
go
stuff,
on.
Man. Wow. No, come on. It's true. Actually, all you guys are.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I love that he said that like before Siobhan. That never happens. Like, Benny, you're an amazing musician. And Siobhan, well, you are good
no,
too.
No, but he's been sending me songs. And I'm like, what the hell? Wait. He's like, yeah, that's just me and Marty Prima and Siobhan, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm
Corey's on there too.
Ground, you know? Amazing.
Oh, and Corey awesome. Mixed Thank all you. That stuff. Just so you know, all that crazy stuff, he mixed that.
Wow. It's amazing stuff. Have you heard it, Shannon?
Yeah, I've heard all. Yeah.
Well, we're going to send you chapter three. You haven't heard that yet. So that's coming as a thank you to both of you guys in the mail. We'll make sure you guys get chapter three.
Sick. Yeah. Hey, want to see something cool that I have?
Let's see it.
This cool record right here.
Oh, woo! Shit.
Oh, no! Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're
it's
entered,
badass.
You entered to win yeah. the car?
No, it's not signed.
Oh, it's not.
No, I just happened to have one. I think I might have bought it first. I don't know. I was quick. As soon as it came out, yeah. Boom, I got it. Shannon, yeah. And I haven't opened it because I'm saving it,
I'll tell you this, Mikey Dolan. I'd have to run over there and maybe not my candles over, but I got Channel Zero records and listen to those things and they sound fucking so they don't buy them, but you sent me those. So, but furthermore, as to support, because Mikey always is supporting these people. Like all my side things, like, you know, it's not, he's never let that dude, oh, you know, you get me in. Godsmack or whatever, or back then Ugly Kid was the thing I was in. It was always, man, he always supported me because I've always been, you know, I always do shit on the side and
dude, all your shit is so deep thought and badass and there's so much like real art behind it. Like you're a real artist, you know. It's like I like art and not only are you one of my favorite friends, but you're a fucking awesome artist. Of course I'm,
well,
I'm into it.
We'll pack on that because Shannon told me that he writes lyrics and I'm like, oh no, this can't be.
Well, dude, he writes
drummers that write lyrics. And then he sent just like one of those things like, okay, there's Neil Peart. Name another one that's really good. There's not that many. And then he sends me these lyrics and they're like fucking Pink Floyd.
They're really
like,
is epic, right?
Yeah. I'm like, he sent me lyrics and I'm not even kidding. I'm not blowing smoke up his ass, his little fucking 105 pound ass. I started like welling up when he told me because he said, you know, he was in rehab and he wrote this one song and I'm listening to it. And of course, everyone can picture this now. I'm on my hoverboard doing like 8 miles just in circles, listening to this song over and over and over and over and over and over. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel so alone.
Dude,
and it's Shannon's lyrics. He's like, I woke up in the middle of the night from a dream and I wrote it. And I'm like, oh my God. Because you're brilliant, and all I want to do is get in a room with this motherfucker so we can just make shit happen, because he sounds, everything he sends me is incredible, and I just want to run with the ball.
Bro, I used to go to Shannon's house 25 years ago in Santa Barbara, and every time I went over there, he'd pull me into his kitchen where he had a little studio set up, and be like, check this out, bro, and he'd be like, you know, he'd play me something. I'm like, what? He's like, I want you to play on it, or Sonny to play on it, or Tumor, or someone, you know, or Lynn. And he always had something creative happening, you know? So, yeah, I've been a fan and a friend, but a fan, a real fan for a long, long time. So every time you put something out, I'm like, well, fuck, I have to have that, you know, Shannon?
No, that says a lot about you as a friend, though. I love that you said that because, you know, I notice even with me, like, there are a lot of people where they'll be very supportive of one project that's, like, kind of the big project, and then everything else I do on the side, they, like, don't even listen to it or they don't check it out. And it's like, you know, I understand people are busy, but I feel like the people that really are the good friends and the good fans, like, support you holistically as an artist, and they're there to listen to, like, every goddamn thing you put out, you know?
Well, I like that with all my bands and artists I love. I want to hear all their body of work, right? Like, what was that, you know? Of course.
Corey's not like that. Corey's like, dude, I've already heard enough this week on 2020, and I already heard enough of those 7 demos you sent me. Stop. This is not my email address anymore. Yeah.
Shannon, what were you going to say? You were going to say something.
You hit the nail on the head, and like, I had this thing happen and where I had just talked on the phone with this person. I'm not going to mention it because it's water under the bridge or whatever. But, you know, and explain the whole, like, idea of the concept of this new record we were recording and all this shit. And I finally got it done and sent him a band copy and with the Dropbox link. So you know when somebody comes on your link if they listen to your shit or not.
Right.
And the dude listened to it. And I, you know, kind of, you know, first I reached out tentatively, maybe, you know, I don't know. But it offended me. And I'm not easily offended, man, you know. I'm really not. I mean, I wear fucking, you know, tie-dyed bell bottoms, but, you know, paint my fingernails or whatever. But it's, you know, he offended me.
No, especially when they're close to you. There's a thing between us as artists, man, where we support each other. And like, you really want to hear my shit? I'm going to send it to you. And I care what you think. And then when they don't respond, it's weird, right? I get it.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like you're in Godsmack, right? So you're in a band that's so big that it's like, fuck it. And you're riding, you're on a bus together and Sully Erna's driving. With the Apocalypse Blues revival, it's one of those things where it's like, it's your girlfriend. So anyone else can tell you you're ugly, all right? I don't care about your band. Fuck that band. But if they tell you that the Apocalypse Blues revival sucks, that's a personal jab at your psyche. And that hurts. And that's one of those things. It's like, normally it doesn't get under your skin, but like, that's the, it's like, again, the one person that matters to you telling you.
Listen, man, you missed that. What I meant was I'd rather hear my friend say, man, I'm not into that. I think,
right. I was just going to say that.
Than to fucking not fucking listen to it, you know?
Yeah. I'd rather be told their opinion, whether they like it or not, than them nothing it at all.
It means you listen to it first if you hate it. So at least you listen to it. That's my point.
Yeah, well, I can say from experience, having traveled a few thousand miles to come see the Apocalypse Blues revival with Siobhan, that you guys kick ass.
Florida?
It was an awesome show. I had several too many whiskeys myself, but really enjoyed
it. Hold on, but I want to hear about this because your wife, Domi, told me that you and Siobhan decided to leave Brock, her husband, and Domi in the back to go find, because Shannon's so much of a rock star, even though you fly to Florida, he's like in the back, like, yay! Right? But you left poor freaking Mouse 1 and Mouse 2.
No. So after the show, you know, the stage crew's breaking down and you know, we see the band go backstage. We're like, oh, we'll give them a minute before we go say hi. And I don't know how long that minute was, because once again, I had several of these. It was probably like 30 seconds, but I was like, let's go see what's going on. And Siobhan's like, yeah, let's go see what's going on. So we just walked backstage and we found, I think I just opened a door and yelled, is there a Shannon in here? And I heard a voice that called affirmative. So we went back and we kind of forgot about our spouses that were still out front.
They're outside going like, what do we do? They're in Gen Pop.
Yeah. I should point out that they did eventually make their way back and we all had a wonderful time. So thank you again, Shannon.
Hey, Shannon, are you the only one who doesn't drink in your band, or are you guys all like not drinking?
Well, Rambola, he quit a year before me, but then fell off in the pandemic year and started drinking again.
Oh, wow.
Years. Yeah. But he wasn't like, you know, self-destructive, we'll say, like I was, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
He didn't like blackout and shit, you know what I mean? So fucking, anyway, so he started drinking again. He's normal, you know, his thing was, he was just drinking a 6-pack a day for 20 years. And he's like, he felt like a slave. And like, he's like, if I get home, you know, and I didn't have that 6-pack, I'd get in my car and go to the store. So I just wanted to break that. That's why he quit. So he didn't.
Right. I see.
He wasn't like ruining his life or something like
that. He wasn't burying whores in the desert.
I was going down, you know what I mean? So that's what the only reason I quit.
Kenny, what'd you say, Ben?
I said, I'm not like burying, you know, whores in the desert, you know, like very bad things. Like, oh, this is maybe.
That's right. I remember that movie.
Because I'm going to tell you, this is the reason why I don't drink. If I do cocaine, I arrange things around my house and then tell myself I'm angry. Say, if I do heroin, I go to bed. If I take acid, I start talking about astrally projecting myself to fucking Shannon. If I drink, nothing. Like, I'm like, fat girls are hot. I'm like, I feel like stealing things is a good idea. I feel
we're
like taking
so many people right
going
now.
Going to the bathroom in public places is a good idea. I'm just saying anything that makes me think that those things are good ideas is a bad thing for me. So I would much rather take something that makes me at least like clean my house than like try to have sex with fat things. So.
Right. Well, hey, check it out. All right, that was very offensive to poor other girls, but it's not like I quit drinking. I'm just on the wagon right now to try to get my body ready for stage because I just lost 30 pounds, man. And
good
it takes
you.
Thanks.
Dude, look at him from the before and after. Dude, you are a monster. I see you on your bike every day. You're like benching. You look like an X-Man, dude. You're fucking huge.
I'm going to try to thin these down a little bit. Pythons. But,
you don't want to look like that dude from Alice Cooper back in the day.
I think about him. Like, I don't want to be that guy. It's funny you say that.
Not that he's that guy. We love you, or whatever your name is. You know.
All my bros are calling me Danzig now. I'm like, God damn it.
Mother.
But you know what? I'm going to Belgium next week to start playing shows, and I'm going to have a few beers at the show. It's just the way it is. So I'm saving myself.
But there's a happy balance, though. There's like Doyle from the Misfits, which is like uncomfortable, or like George Lynch in his jacked period, where you're just like, what's going on, Mr. Scary? You're scaring me. Like, that's uncomfortable. You're at the level where it's like, dude, you could take off your shirt and not be a dick. Well, I think that's good. Good for you. That's
3 months ago, I was a mess. Guitar out here.
Yeah.
And I saw a photo of myself. I'm like, and I saw tour dates. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I can't go on the fucking road like this.
So can you give us the rock star diet to get back in shape? What have you been doing aside from cutting out alcohol?
I get up 5 in the morning.
Oh my God, I'm out.
Do a black coffee and get on my bike and do between 10 and 16 miles. It's this path I take in the morning. And then I come home. And it's funny. I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'll do a little brown rice cake with a little bit of almond on it, you know, and then I'll hit the gym for 2 or 3 hours right after that ride. Exactly.
Okay, it's definitely out.
Oh, yeah.
That's commitment, man.
Yeah, then I come home. The family's up. I take my son out swimming. I get active, do whatever. And then at the end of the night, right after I eat dinner, I shut down. I eat dinner at 5, and I don't eat after that. I'll do another 10-mile bike ride.
Holy shit.
Wow.
That's what I've been doing, like full on sports, like athlete, you know? And,
maybe you can make the Olympics.
Well, hold on. You know, I got to tell you, though, if you want to add to that regimen, anxiety and self loathing go a long way to staving off. Because, like, for me, all I need to do is take too many projects and I start getting six pack. Like, I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, like, sweating. I'm already wearing the sweatshirt, the sweat.
Well, yeah, anxiety will make you skinny, but you're not going to build muscle.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Anxiety.
But then I feel the need to do everything. And then I'm like running around like a maniac. And then I have to eat because I haven't, my lovely fiance prepared this nice salmon with asparagus and rice and all that for me because I've been on Zoom calls all day, literally pacing. But I'll tell you right now, my Samsung told me it was 16 miles.
No,
so,
wow.
I paced 16 miles on the phone today.
You know, it's not like everybody has to worry about that, but my body wants to be fat. Like, he's dying to be fat. My image in the mirror is like, come on, dude, slow down, drink some beers.
You'll always be
pizza.
Fat to be Dolan. You'll always be fat.
No, man, I got to stop. I'm going into I'm in my 50s now. I want to look back on my older guy career on photos and not fucking hide them.
No, that's what it is, though. It takes just one photo you see of yourself at, like, a festival. Because this has happened to me where I'm just like, oh, my God, my skin or something. Because people get those cameras at a festival.
Don't be Iggy Pop. Don't be, like, where you're so in shape, but then you're so vascular that it's, like, creeping people out because you're, like, 75 years old.
I would love to be Iggy Pop. He's the man.
That's true. Iggy Pop is the man.
Doesn't Iggy Pop have, like, a scoliosis or something? Like,
I don't think he has it. I think when they said that Marilyn Manson cut out his ribs, I think they were actually talking about Iggy Pop because he does like that.
No, he's got some kind of His spine is curved. If you ever notice, he walks.
Seem reptilian to me.
No, he's got.
Okay, well, but not to interrupt this this flow, but I wanted to ask because I want to know the friendship story of Mikey and Shannon. How did you guys meet? Like, how are you friends now? Because I'm missing all that context. Shannon, so maybe for our listeners.
Can I start, Shannon? You mind?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Here's my introduction to Shannon Larkin. Okay. Of course, I knew who Rothschild America was. You know, I saw them at the Whiskey back in the old days. I think of Pantera. Right? Does that sound right? Yeah, I saw that show. Anyway, but I was just like, that drummer's insane. But I didn't even know it was Shannon, you know. But years later, I'm really close friends with the guys in Ugly Kid Joe. They're literally like mentors to me, brothers, but more like mentors because they were a local band in Santa Barbara where Snot's from, and I watched them become from a party band to playing some local gigs to exploding on MTV. And I was just like, oh, it fucking can be done. I didn't imagine that anybody I would know would ever make it. We called it making it when you're a kid, you know, like they made it. Okay. So then I was inspired. I did Snot and I had, you know, a different band called Snot. Only one that was in it was Lynn. And then I had these two other guys. Brent Trevino was a drummer, big heavy set dude, and Ruben Gonzalez was playing bass. We hadn't even had all the songs yet, but we were calling ourselves Snot. Well, anyway, Ugly Kid Joe was replacing the drummer, Mark Davis. And they said, we're trying guys out down at our studio. They had this great studio down by the beach in Santa Barbara. And I got a call from Dave Fortman or Klaus. We're like, hey, we got a drummer. And he's a fucking beast. You got to come check him out. I'm like, rad, I want to come down. Any chance I got to hang out with those guys, I felt like their successful dust would just pour on me. So I'm like coming down the studio like, this is going to help me figure out how to make my band Snot bigger. Like, you know, I just was in that frame of mind. Hanging out with rock stars is going to help me get there. Not only did I love them, though, but hanging out with them, I was a little even starstruck. They were my friends. But I remember I was actually wanting to get a drummer in my band because I wasn't real happy with the drummer, but that's a side note from what I'm going to tell you. We walk into Ugly Kid Joe's studio and they're playing and I can hear him. I open the door and I walk in, I'm kind of creeping around the corner and I see this dude, skinny frame, bald head, tattoos on both sides of his head, tattooed everywhere, swinging his sticks from back here as if he was playing Wembley Arena, you know, and just crushing that shit. And I just thought to myself, like, holy fucking shit, man. Like, this is a different band now. I knew immediately, like, this band is the next level now. Ugly Kid Joe, I know them so well. I thought to myself, this doesn't work. He's way too awesome.
I'll interject in certain little parts because I love this story and you'll love it too, Mike. When Lynn told me when he first saw me with Ugly.
The late great Lynn Strait, so people know. The late great Lynn Strait from Snot.
Yeah, God rest his soul.
Motherfuckers shouldn't.
Absolutely. So,
anyway, when Lynn told me when he first saw me, he thought, that should be our drummer.
That's what we thought. Me and Lynn both thought the same thing. We said that when we saw you. We're like, so why is he an Ugly Kid Joe and not in Snot? Like, and we're like, well, because they're famous and we're not. And Lynn's like, I don't care. Let's talk to him. I'm like, can't do that. Yeah, it's true, though, Shannon. He definitely thought that.
Anyway, carry on.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you blew my head off at that moment. I watched you guys play, and I kept thinking, like, well, now I don't know what to do because I need a drummer like that or I'm not going to be fucking happy, you know?
Wait. All right, let me come in here because you can't forget this part, man. Before all that, then Ugly Kid Joe rented this, like, mansion in where was it, Mikey?
No, it wasn't before. It was after that.
No, because
they got their mansion.
No, because What's his name? What's the bass for on bass and drums? So it was before Tumor even.
You're right.
And that's when I said to you, and nothing against these dudes, man, they were the coolest cats, you know, but I'm like, dude, you and Lynn are fucking like stars.
After I saw you playing the drums for the first time, we got to be friends with you. Okay.
Yeah. And now you can start from where you started.
Well, Ugly Kid Joe ended up getting a mansion up by down the street from Michael Jackson's up in San Ynez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dean Martin used to lay dick in that motherfucker.
he sure did. Dean Martin said that was his old place or something, right?
Yeah, remember in the there was some famous John McEnroe or somebody was over across the way and they were complaining because we were so loud. It was a surreal time, but Snot played our first gig.
It was our first gig.
Yeah, first gig at the Halloween party at the Ugly Kid Joe Mansion. We were a mess then. It was brilliant.
Dude, it was the first time Snot ever played. It was just me and Lynn with two other guys. We were calling ourselves Snot, and we'd never performed before. Ugly Kid Joe had this giant mansion where they were recording America's Least Wanted. Is that right? Or was it the one after? It was the one after,
Menace to Sobriety.
Menace to Sobriety.
the big one.
Yeah, with Garth Richardson, Garth, the big producer guy.
Garth, yes.
Right. They were producing it there, and I basically was living up there. They were like, come up anytime you want, eat all the food, drink all the booze, bang all the chicks, it's all good.
So, remember the nut joke we do in the kitchen?
Oh, God, yeah, of course. Yeah, I remember that.
Let's talk about it. We would crack one. Me and him and Klaus would stand in his fancy kitchen.
This kitchen was like multi-million-dollar mansion, you know? And go ahead, sorry.
They had fucking walnuts and bowls, right?
The bowl the size of like this round, a full of walnuts. I mean, it had to be 25 pounds of walnuts.
So random.
Hundreds of walnuts. So we would, and for hours, we'd sit there. It was the funniest thing. You'd throw a walnut on the ground and like crunch it and go, and like it would make the sound of breaking, but we'd be all,
and it was just, and we were super drunk, of course, the whole time, right? So Shannon would walk up to me and go, hold on, put a walnut under his foot and grab my head and go, we would laugh for 20 minutes thinking that was the funniest thing of all time because we're so wasted, man. And we ended up crunching, I don't know, hundreds of walnuts all over this floor.
Do it again!
And this floor was expensive tile, man, in a giant, expensive San Ynez mansion. I don't even know who cleaned that up, Shannon.
I don't know, but the party was rad, and Snot's, they had My Balls Your Chin, even at an early version.
That was like our first song, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was so rad, and we were like, we fell in love with those guys. And we were like, you know, and then.
Shannon came to me, and Dave Fortman, because he recorded some demos for us just after that, okay? Right after that, we went to the studio with Dave Fortman down at his house down in Santa Barbara, where he had a makeshift studio, not makeshift, a nice studio in his house, Rockstar Studio. And the first demo we ever did. But Shannon and Dave both came to us and said, look, Lynn, Mikey, you guys have a shit ton of potential here. You fucking, you know, I don't know if you said it or I said it, but we got to replace the other guys in the band. Yeah. Right? That was a conversation we had.
And yeah. And it was obvious.
We're trying to be delicate because we don't want to offend anybody that may be offended if they see this. But so Shannon, from how I remember it, he told me I got a bass player that you have to check out. So come to my apartment. I went down to his apartment where he had his badass 65 Impala. 66 or 65? 64. Yeah. Impala. Like easy ease shit, you know. He parked right outside of his badass beach apartment, right?
Yeah, one apartment, but I had a big 6'4". You should see my name, Mike, and my 6'4" now is dope.
I've seen it. The one that Godsmack gave you, right? The red one, I think it is, or?
Well, $20,000 later, you know, and it's a fucking monster now, you know.
Oh, man. I got to see that. But anyway, so Shannon's like, I got your bass player. Cause I caught my other bass player from Snot. It's crazy shooting meth in our studio. I walked in on him. I'm like, oh wow, that's a needle hanging out of your arm. And he was just bonkers out of his mind. Ah, like just scaring me, you know? I mean, I'm no angel, but I wasn't shooting meth. Anyway, so I had to get rid of him. Yeah.
but like, you know, well, you know, we don't need to say it, but I tried meth one time. And with Mike.
Yeah, we tried that before. 4 days later, we're like, we have 75 songs.
I was like, I'll never do it again. I mean, I look like a skeleton anyway, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, that's not the drug for me. I decided
that's garbage.
You'll disappear.
Like I like beer. But anyway, let me finish this story. I'm sorry, I'm taking up on.
Please tell it.
So I go to Shannon's and we burned down a little Santa Barbara weed, and we always drank some beers. Shannon always had some beers, like some Sierra Nevada or some good beer in the fridge. And he's like, all right. And he sits down in front of his TV. I just see it now, Indian style, pulls out this VHS tape. And he's like, this is the MF Pitbulls. I'm like, awesome. He's like, it's my other band in back east, back home. Check it out. So he pops it in and he's all, there's your bass player. And it was Tumor from Snot, but I'd never met him before. And I was sold immediately. I'm like, yeah, can you call him? I don't know. Did you call him like right then, Shannon? I think you may have.
I did, because I had told, you know, a long story short with the MF Pitbulls is we had a record deal from Roadrunner. And it was Jamie Miller on drums who played for Snot. He's now with Bad Religion.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
Tumor and Sutton Mayo on guitar. And so when I all of a sudden met Whitfield Crane and had the opportunity to live in California, move to California, or go and be a drummer, or go and be a singer. And try and be a singer, which I've been a drummer 8 years old. I'm a drummer, you know, and I knew it. And so I had to say to Tumor and Sonny and Jamie, I'm not, you know, after it's not easy to get a record deal, you understand. So it was a big kick in the nuts for me to break the band up right when we were going to sign a record deal. So,
right. Those other guys were thinking, this is it. And then Shannon's leaving. He's like, wait a minute, where are you going?
So anyway, the good news is I promised them I will hook you fucking up. And I'm going out to a whole different world, guys. I will hook you up. And when I saw, you know,
I'll bring you out to California. You told him that. Get you a gig. I told
them that. And so, and Tumor was first, man. Mikey's like bass player. Because at first, Mikey, I'll let you tell it, but he wasn't interested at first in a second guitarist, you know?
No, at first it wasn't at all. And we had another drummer even.
Yeah.
I just wanted to replace the bassist. So sorry I cut you off, but he called Tumor and said, dude, it's on. I told you I'd get you that gig and I got you the gig. So you got to come out. So I think we bought him a plane ticket. Never met him. Dude, check this out. We never sent him a song, not even one song. Just not. He packed all his shit and came to California, never even hearing the band, just on Shannon's recommendation.
Wow.
Because we knew each other. Me and Tumor played in Kitty Porn back in the day, which the band.
Yes.
It was the first bass player I had in that band that said, you know, what's the worst thing on the whole planet? That's what we need to call our punk rock band.
Oh, Kitty Porn. Yeah. They had a band called Kitty Porn.
Yeah, Kitty Porn. So that's where
there was a local Boston band called Full Blown AIDS.
Oh, God.
That was one of my favorites. Well, the sweat pant boners was my personal favorite as far as just like that. That's a really good one. Yeah. It's not as offensive, but it's just like
it's just creative and visual.
It's very creative. Yeah.
Yeah. That's better than the anal cunt. I don't know.
Yeah, anal cunt. But and the thing I like about the sweatpant boners is it was one, not the sweatpants boner. The sweatpant boner.
Sweatpant boner, dude. That's awesome. Anyway, so Shannon has his boy a gig now, right? It's hilarious, man. We go to LAX, me and Lynn, okay? And Lynn used to drive like a maniac. Okay. So we were waiting for Toomer to come out. Back then it was, you didn't have to go through security and all that. You could wait at the gate. So the plane landed and Toomer came walking out. We're like, hey, dude, we never met him before or nothing. You're in the band. Yeah. And we're California guys. So we're like outgoing. He can barely even say one word. He's like, yeah. Dude, it was awesome.
So typical bass personality.
Yeah, yeah. So we get him in the van. He'd never heard Snot yet. He's already moved his shit to live with us and be in the band.
Did he ever own a tape player? Because he was a bass player. So, I mean.
Yeah. Dude, so we put on the first song you ever heard. It was My Balls, Your Chin. It was the one that Dave Portman recorded. And he, I just saw a look on his face like, oh, like, what did I get myself into? You know, I was like, holy shit. Okay. I'm like, I'm all excited up in his face. I'm like, so what do you think? You love it? You love it, right? And he's just like, I think so. I can see his face. Like, should I go back home? These guys are fucking psycho, you know? Oh, yeah.
The first time that Toomer had ever really left and gone anywhere, man, you know? And now he's in California with these crazy dudes. And
do you know I have a signed Snot sticker that's actually signed by Toomer? It's still on my Fender bass case upstairs in the attic.
Probably says Toomer bass.
Yeah, exactly what it says. Yeah, I have one on my wall over there, and I told this to Mikey, but I have a Lynn Strait signed Ozfest ticket. It's Lynn Strait and LeJon Witherspoon, which is crazy, considering that LeJon wrote Angel Sun, which is what a tribute. Because actually, speaking of tributes, what a great segue, Benny, to the fact that we just released a tribute chapter 3 for our buddy Ollie Herbert. And Angel Sun, which was one of Seven Dust's greatest songs and one of their biggest hits, was a tribute to your fallen singer, Lynn Strait.
I was a co-writer on that song, by the way. The
hook. Really?
That's the kid right
No
here.
Shit, dude. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing, dude. Mm-hmm. I love, that's one of my favorite songs ever to come out of set. Well, it's ever, but Seven Dust is one of my favorite bands, period. And yeah, like, I just think LeJon's voice.
Really, we're really close with those guys, man. LJ, one of the greatest singers in rock and roll. No, he doesn't get enough credit for it.
Yeah, he's like a Corey Glover, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, unless you, and it's not like, oh, the two black guys, you know, like, it's not that. Those guys can sing anything. LeJon Witherspoon can sing anything. He's like a voice from a fucking angel. He can hit every note, every note. The only thing that's disconcerting about it is if you hear a song like Xmas Day, Christmas Day, you know, you hear Clint Lowry, and he comes in, and his voice is so beautiful. It's beautiful. You're like, oh my God, what a great singer. You're like, why isn't this guy singing more? And then all of a sudden LeJon comes in and just the frequencies of his voice around Clint. You're just like, oh my God.
Well, you know, Clint is the one who spawned Angel Sun. He's the one who came up with most of the lyrics, the actual song itself and the structure. And then me and Toomer and Sonny, Morgan, Clint, we got together and recorded that entire song for Straight Up. And then after they left, I produced that song more. I grabbed a guitar. I put 8 tracks of harmonies on.
Really?
On the hook. Yeah, yeah. I completely filled it up with piano. Actually, there's a funny story that a couple days after we recorded that song, acoustic live, we actually tracked that. That's us jamming, if you listen to it. Just a couple overdubs later that I did. We went on a tour bus. We partied all night. We were up all night, if you know what I mean, drinking and doing whatever. And I went to bed, and Clint and LJ went directly to the studio, no rest, boom, and recorded that song.
Oh my God.
That's crazy. It was pretty hardcore. I woke up. They're like, they're already in their bunk sleeping. They're like, yeah, we finished it. I'm like, wow, man, how the hell did you do that, man?
Like, we were still inspired.
Yeah, man. God. We drove all the way from, I think it was an overnight ride from just California to Phoenix, you know? And
wasn't that like, that song did pretty commercially well, did it not?
It was number 8. It was number 8 in the top 100, I think, or top 40, excuse me, rock songs. Yeah, it was big.
But I mean, people have to understand how big of a deal that was. First off, back in the day when you were selling physical units for a band, like, you know, like at the level that you guys, you know, like working band level touring, but like actually people could hear you. That was such a success of a song. And I'm telling you, like, it's forever in my mind. And every single time I hear it and they still play it, I put my devil horns up to the head to the skies.
Bro, when I hear it, I still get teared up because it's for Lynn, man. You know, like at that time, man, every note we wrote for Straight Up for the album, including his son, it was just excruciating, man. You know, so that's when I hear it, I think that, you know, I'm missing my boy, you know. So
how long has it been, bro? I mean,
Lynn? Well, he done, it was 98 December, almost 99.
Jesus Christ, right? Yeah. Holy crap,
23 years.
So people know, because not all of our listeners, so Siobhan knows that Lynn Street, you know, got hit by a truck with his dog, if I'm correct, right?
No, it's not really like that. He was, I'll tell you the real story. He was up all night with two strippers in a hotel, getting crazy, having the Lynn Street normalcy of a weekend, right?
So this is not the spun PR story. This is what happened. Okay.
Oh, this is what fucking happened. He was up all night hanging out with these girls, and he jumped in his car to go home after a wonderful time, but with no sleep, you know. And there's a place on the 101 outside of Santa Barbara called Muscle Shoals. And the way they used to have the freeway, the on-ramp from the freeway from Muscle Shoals, there was no on-ramp. It was like cars going like this way and this way at 80 miles an hour and a stop sign. And if you want to go this way, like north, you got to cross southbound traffic from a dead stop sign.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. And take a left to get north to Santa Barbara. Total death trap. And Lynn was just sitting at that stop sign, just been up all night. Who knows what he was on, doing, drinking, what? He wasn't drinking because he didn't drink, but he was definitely doing something. And he just, he pulled out in front of a truck. Yeah, it was, it took his life immediately.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were
I was at the studio with Mikey and Toomer when the call came.
Yeah.
It was one of the saddest days of my life, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Absolutely. Still 22 years later, man, I'm struggling not to start losing my shit right now. But we shared some time, Shannon, for sure.
The positive thing and why I was with Mikey and Toomer at the studio was, and this is what happened to, like, it's a funny thing because I have, you know, so we wrote all these songs, you know, Mikey and Toomer and I rehearsing in Klaus's garage, Klaus from Mother Cadreau, and just writing.
In Santa Barbara. Uh-huh.
In Santa fucking Barbara. Things were so good, you know, like
Cliff Drive, dude.
Of course. Yeah. And, you know, and Jamie had left the band. So I was thinking, you know, it might have been. And Lynn's like, you know, just play with us and you'll decide. I'm not trying to steal, you know what I mean? Ugly kid or whatever.
Just help us out.
But yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like Lynn was like, you decide once you hear this fucking record done or whatever. So anyway, it was a magical time. And we got to remember that time, you know. But
yeah,
you know, and so, you know, like, but, and for me as you know, I played every song, you know, except Angel's Son. And that was
right.
The one.
That's so right. That's Shannon, the one that Shannon played all the drums.
The one that everybody knows, though. That's what I'm reading.
Right. Oh, yeah, I understand. Yeah,
straight up,
sure.
Fucking straight up project. Yeah, that song, Angel's Son, the one fucking song I didn't play on. I was like,
that's right. I never thought of that, man. Like,
yeah, and everybody, oh, that's the best song ever. You know, I'd like, what, did you hear the other 10 we made, Lynn? That fuck, whatever. But I love that song too. But same shit, like, you know, the great Roy Mayorga, another dear friend of Mike and I's, fucking, yeah. You know, He's in the great Stone Sour, and you know, he had made Max the promise that he would play this giant festival down South America, whatever. And Stone Sour's like, and he's like, well, you know, call somebody, Shannon Larkin, he said. Uh-huh. And Corey, I know Corey and Jim, whatever. They're like, yeah, Shannon. And so one song, right? And because Roy has to leave. So I come and play on the song 30-31-50, which ended up being the first single and number one song on the record.
Right.
And so Roy was like, when he got back from South America, he's like, you motherfucker. You know,
now I didn't even know that. I mean, I knew it, but I didn't remember that. Dude, that's
Shannon,
right.
You just piss out excellence. Like, dude, I swear to God. Like, I had some conversation where I was arguing with Shannon, which you should never do because he's always right because it's true. Because he knows way more than you. But he was like, I don't remember the exact number. It was like, one of these could be the converse. But he's like, I've done 38 records in 36 years. And I'm just like, okay, I have nothing. Literally nothing over that. And then he forgets more number one singles that he's been on than I've ever had, because that's zero. That's zero number ones.
Oh, yeah. That's Larkin.
Because that's Shannon Larkin, and he's such a humble dude, and it's just like, I love that about him, and he gets so excited about his music, because every single song is the best song, because it's the newest song, and it's the one to his heart, and that's something that goes along with being a great musician, is never having that moment where you go, oh, I'm just rehashing this.
Thank you for listening to part one of our talk with Shannon Larkin and Mikey Doling. Be sure to stay tuned for part two coming out in just a few days. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on those future episodes. And this week's throwback clip is from episode number 61, also featuring Mikey Doling. Check it out.
We mic'd up Lynn's bedroom. We did. There's mics behind the bed. You can hear it going on the album. If you listen to the end of...
We call this sound design.
If you listen to the end of, I think it's 313, you can actually pull it up. The very end, there's... it's real.
Is that stereo mic so you get the full image? Or is that just
the flat ones? I forget what they're called. The Z mics or something.
Fact that they were going into a Neve preamp just said so much to the coloring of the sound.
Oh, yeah. Right. And then there was a SM57 right at the foot of his bed, like right there.
Well, the most important microphone in history.
Yeah, and they don't even know what it's for, and it's live. And we're in the control room listening, going, woo, I've...
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.